Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, and you're listening to the Comic-Com, man. This is where you get all your comics info, and take that from a comics guy, a comic book man.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Comic-Com podcast, season 3, episode 50, recording this on December 14th, 2023. We got a loaded, packed show, a little late tonight coming in from Jersey because there was a bull on the transit line over in Newark today. I don't know if anybody heard about that. If you can go ahead and Google that, there was a bull walking down the train station in Newark, New Jersey.
Just
pretty wild stuff here in December. So absolutely crazy, but never happens here in Jersey. It's your boy Nemesis Prime, Milton Manimal. What's going on, Zach? How are you?
Welcome back. I kind of felt like
40th.
No, thank you. Yeah, I kind of felt like that bull might have been like one of the Longhorns from down here in Texas, escaped up there somehow. So,
but listen, I've seen like vultures and other types of birds like on the tracks and stuff like that. But I could see like a horse in like the farmlands, but we're talking for people here on the East Coast, like Newark, New Jersey is a town. Like that's like the hub where everybody goes to go to New York. Like
there's no cattle anywhere.
Yeah. There's no farms around. It's literally a city. Like it's the weirdest thing. So
they haven't said like where it came from. No, nothing's come out on it yet.
I did see an updated video with some people putting it in, like capturing it and put it, or I think they tranked it and put it into like a, you know, normal, hall that they'd put in like a horse or whatever.
Yeah
it was pretty wild today, so whatever. 45 minute delay on New Jersey transit. Thank God I don't have to go into the city and work there, so wild stuff. But how are you?
I'm good, man. Just just a little tired from the weekend, little Vegas for the 40th, jumped out of an airplane, drank a bunch of booze, lost a lot of money, did not win at all. It's like that's like three consecutive Vegas trips where I've not won anything. So maybe I'm due next time, or maybe I should just stop going. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, you've been up Europe at Terrificon, right? You've been winning at Terrificon.
I won at Terrificon pretty well. I mean, as much as you, I won all that. I won the money, and then I immediately spent it on Ghost Rider books. So it was like free comics, I guess you could say. But I did not do well in Vegas. I did, but whatever. All good.
Awesome. Well, speaking of Terrificon, we announced last week that we would be setting up at Terrificon. We also will be setting up at King Kong. And we talked about having a collab with our friend V. Ken Marion. And with that news, we brought the man himself on this week to talk more about what's going on with Ken, what's coming up in 2024. Hello, sir. How are you?
What's up, Justin? What's up, Zach? How's it going, guys? Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday, Zach.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk about Terrificon comics and stuff. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, so for the people who, you know, if you're new to listening to the podcast, make sure you go check out Mr. V. Ken Marion on Instagram. He's doing a lot of stuff over there on his gram. If you're an old-time listener, he's been on here a few times, so, you know, go back, check out those older episodes. You can learn about Ken and his all the stuff where he's drawn, whether it's Aspen, Marvel, DC, some miniseries. He's done some. We had him earlier. I think our first episode this year we had where he was doing the Deathstroud stuff. And I know Ken's going to be doing something early next year. I don't know how much you want to talk about that, Ken, but let's kind of start there. What do you got going on for 2024?
Yeah, so I've got a creator-owned book that I'm co-writing that I co-created with my writing partner, and we're co-writing it, and I'm drawing and inking it, and we got a little tripped up this year because we wanted to have it out by September, but we're you know, life got in the way and other projects and stuff, so we had to delay a little bit. But we're aiming to be launching it in 2024, and we're super excited. It's going to be a 52-page book with 52 pages of story, and I've got one more page to draw, so it's like almost done on my end.
Nice.
We're really excited. It's I definitely want to come back to talk about it more when we can like talk about the name and stuff, but it's definitely like the kind of book I wanted to read when I was a kid. It's like everything that I loved when I was like 13, 14, 15, like growing up playing video games, discovering comic books, like all this stuff that I love kind of rolled into like one kind of, in my mind, like my perfect story that I always wanted to read. So yeah, we're really excited about it, and I can't wait to talk more about it. Can't talk too much about it right now, but yeah, for those cons, we should definitely have some books ready to go by then. So I'm very, very excited to get out into the world. I've been working on it since the concept, since like 2011, but really started writing it around 2019 is when me and my writing partner really started to like buckle down and like really put a focus on it. So it's been a long time coming and we're both super excited about it. And I can't wait to get people to read it. It's going to be everyone's new favorite comic. Like I can guarantee you that. Like your new favorite characters will be in this book.
Can you, without giving too much away, can you anticipate sort of when in the year it'll drop?
Hopefully. Either Q1 or Q2.
Everything's a hopeful, right?
Yeah. Okay. We're going to be crowdfunding it. So we're going to have more information for that pretty soon. We're hoping pretty soon. Awesome. By the end of the year or by the beginning of 2024, like we're going to have all the information for the crowdfunding up pretty soon. So that's the plan.
Cool.
Nice. Yeah. So I know we were talking about it. And like you said, you know, hopefully that'd be a great thing to have it ready for April for King Kong. You know, and you know, if not, you know, even if you do it and then you still got copies left over, we'll have them at Terrificon, which is going to be awesome. But, you know, we're super excited for, you know, you to jump on board with us for Terrificon, you know, and also King Kong. You know, thank you so much for, you know, we've known each other for many years and, you know, we got to talk a little bit at New York. And I know we were talking off screen about like New York by itself, but as an artist and being an artist alley, you know, how was that this year compared to the past couple of years? You know, what was your feelings about it? Was it back to like the full force pre COVID?
Well, first off, thank you for having me at the two cons. Thank you so much for asking me to come. I'm super excited about them. And yeah, about New York, it didn't quite feel like pre COVID to me. Like it definitely was better than last year and the year before for sure. But it did not feel to have that same sort of level of enthusiasm as pre-COVID. And we were talking offline, like it seemed like anime is kind of like really taking over the show in a big way. So it did sort of feel almost more like an anime con than a comic con. But that's cool. I love anime, you know. So it was cool to see all that merch and stuff around. But yeah, it didn't quite feel like, how did you think about it? Did you think it was like pre-COVID or like from your perception of it?
So I wasn't there on Thursday, but Friday definitely seemed pretty crowded and just talking with vendors and, you know, some of the artists and everybody, like they said that they were busy. So, you know, that's always good as long as they're making money, I know. And then the typical Saturday show is just an absolute nightmare to walk through. So, you know, as long as you made money at the end, if you made some connections, you got to hang out with some people. I know for you, it's really tough to get up on the floor, but you know, if you can, you know. I think all in all, I think the people that I chatted with, they enjoyed it. But I agree, it's feeling like the comic book space is always getting smaller and smaller in some realms. And, you know, especially when like DC used to have like a giant booth and Marvel have a giant booth to like walk around and walk in. And like, that's kind of gone away.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like there weren't really any movies that from either of Marvel or DC that were really being hit hard at the con. It felt like it was like, they usually have a presence there to promote something, you know, like whether like the Batman versus Superman or Avengers or whatever, maybe whatever year that lines up. But like, I didn't feel like there was anything that was like really being hit hard with that.
The strike was still going on. They couldn't
really
strike and everything. So that kind of messed everything up. But it does seem like the past couple of years for even like, you know, the typical San Diego, like Hall H announcements and stuff. Now that Disney kind of has like their own con, right? Like it's not the same releases that things used to be. It doesn't feel like anymore. Like you used to go to San Diego Comic Con. That was like Hall H. That's when you found out here's the lineup coming out. This was the MCU at its core. And for every year, these are the next movies. But now we're kind of getting information other ways besides these cons now. So that almost like that aspect's kind of drying up a little bit as well. So.
It's been like, and you know, Ken, if you got the chance to walk on the floor, you know what it looked like. And I agree, like anime takes over. Like they have all the big blow up things, whether it's for Dragon Ball Z or Gundam or Yu Yu Hakusho or whatever, you know, One Piece. It was just wild to see everything up there. And I remember years ago when, you'd have like 20th Century Fox had like a big booth. Legendary Pictures had a booth, you know, like you said, DC, whatever it was, whether it was the Justice League, Batman versus Superman, they'd have all the costumes. Like it was cool. And now it's like, it's kind of just like booths for whatever, you know, just there's like a section for the anime. There's a section for gaming, the comics, cosplay, eBay Live was there, you know, it's just, it gets smaller and smaller every year for the spaces, I feel. And I mean, it's kind of good, I guess, if they have less spots for certain things, but especially when it's called Comic Con.
Yeah, right. It's a weird name now.
But what is cool about New York is that it is, I feel like, the best artist alley, like that I've ever been to. You know, for any Comic Con where they give you the whole room, the whole bottom floor, it's like massive. They get a ton of artists in there from like all levels, like the superstars to like indie guys just breaking in. You know, like everyone's represented. I know I've heard really good things about Heroes Con. That's the other one I've heard really good things about, and I've never been to it yet. I'm hoping to do it this year because I'm going to be going on a con tour this year. Like the last few years I've only done New York, but this year with the new book coming out, I'm going to be hitting up a bunch of cons. So I'm excited to see Heroes Con because I hear that's like the other really good artist alley one. But yeah, compared to like the other shows that I've done, like to San Diego or C2E2 or whatever, New York Comic Con is like the best artist alley.
I agree. For the ones that I've been to as well, I'll be at MegaCon in Orlando in February. So see how that is. I heard that's a great show as well. So, you know, we'll see, you know, come February, the first week of February, I'll be going down there with Otto from 3 Men in the Basement. So I'm excited for that. That's my first time. And Heroes is another one. I heard that's an absolute killer show as well. So,
yeah. Is MegaCon in Florida?
Yes.
The Florida one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Down. Yeah. I want to do that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Still got time. You could go, you know, still, you know, hop down on a flight. It's literally right outside the airport area. So I know we're staying nice. Pretty close to convention center. And, you know, the hardest thing, obviously, it's in February. So you're traveling here from the Northeast to Florida. You're kind of like, is it going to snow? Like, that's the only thing I'm worried about. Yeah. Like, just trying to get out, to be honest. Every other con I've ever gone to, it's always been like the summer, the spring, the fall, where, you know, you really don't have to worry about anything maybe other than rain. Or
at least it'll be warmer, though, when you go down there.
Well, yeah, but to get out of here, it can be snowing. That's the only thing.
Do you remember that 1 year New York Comic Con was in February? Do you remember that? Did you go to it that time? It was like in 2009 or 10.
I feel like that's...
Might have been 2010.
Yeah, I feel like that was maybe the year before I started going.
Yeah. Oh, ooh, dude, Justin. Really? Zach, it was awful. I remember like this is when I was trying to break in still.
Yeah.
And so I was like bringing my portfolio. I was still in college. And I was like bringing my portfolio. And I was like I had the flu that weekend. Like I was sick. Like I was so sick. But I was like, I have to go because I've been working like all year to try to like break in to show people my stuff. And I just remember like walking around the floor, like super flushed, like runny nose, like scaring away all the editors because they're like, oh, I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It sounds miserable.
Well, was Artist Alley was still in that old spot, like far, like on the was in that bubble thing, like on the side. Was that even still there?
No, this was before that. This is before that. This is when Artist Alley was still part of the main show floor. This is like before they did, like, because New York Comic Con used to not be the entire Javits Center. They used to have like other cons going on in the basement. Like the first year I went, there was like an exercise machine expo, so like Nordic and shit were like down there, you know, with like they're with like
weird,
the weight
weird timing the trim-
yeah yeah
all the comic guys was, not was, into fitness with all the fitness dudes like
yeah, it was definitely interesting for sure.
I see on the news or whatever on TV every year, and like of you know, the lighting of the Christmas tree in New York or like the dropping of the ball on New Year's Eve, and you could probably, if you had to ask me top five things you wouldn't want to do in your life, and those are two of them, like I do not want to do.
Oh, for sure.
Sounds miserable. And like you see, everyone's like, oh, it's so great. I'm like, this is not, it doesn't look great at all, dude. Like it looks horrendous. It looks cold as shit for no reason. Like I would avoid that with the plague, man. Like, oh God.
Yeah. Being here on the East Coast, that is the absolute worst things to do. I would never want to be anywhere yet outside of the ball dropping and Christmas lighting. I mean, they did one in my town, like literally this past weekend. And I'm just like, I'll just go there instead of, I mean, I've gone to the tree in the city, but like actually going to when they actually first do it, Rockefeller Center is a complete zoo. And it's always a zoo every weekend after that. So,
but yeah.
Yeah, anyway. For sure.
So let's kind of get into some stuff tonight. Cause tonight's going to be a very interesting episode. Let's kind of go with our community messages. We have a couple over on our Instagram. This is pretty cool. I like Rocksteady. So Rocksteady Collectibles, of course, he's been here on the podcast. He goes, best Christmas gift you've ever got. Ooh. Zach?
Ooh.
Shit, dude.
Well, I'll go first.
Yeah.
Best Christmas gift I ever got, and this is obviously going to lead into what we're talking about later on, is when I got a PlayStation 1 for Christmas and I got Final Fantasy 7. Because, of course, my mom didn't understand that not only did you need the system and the game, but you also needed a memory card. So getting to play Final Fantasy VII all day on Christmas Day and then having to turn the system off and then replay everything that you've already done the next day when you went to like EB or Toys R Us to go buy a memory card, that sucked. But it was so good to like first time when I'm like, this is like amazing to have those type of graphics and get my PlayStation 1. Definitely for me, best Christmas.
That's awesome.
Guys, who wants to go next?
Ken, you go, because I'm still thinking. I have no idea.
Okay, I've got two. My first one's very similar to yours. I was 8th grade. I got a PlayStation 2. And I remember this because I wanted a PlayStation for about... because I was an N64 kid. And I wanted a PlayStation for about a year and a half before this because Final Fantasy IX had come out. And I heard that from a lot of my friends. Like, this is really good. Like, I had never played any of the Final Fantasies because I was an N64 guy, right? Mm. And I saw an ad for Final Fantasy IX. I'm like, this looks cool. This looks like Zelda, but, like, different. And I was, like, begging my parents to, like... come on, a PS1's only like $60. And my dad's like, a PS2's coming out though. A PS2's coming out. So like, I remember that Christmas, I got a PS2 with Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, and 10 all together. And that year I played all four of them all at the same time. And it was like, awesome. That was like the best Christmas. Yeah.
I don't know. I'll keep the theme because I can't think of anything else, but growing up, my parents were not big on like the video game aspect, and like we were pretty poor growing up. And I had an original Nintendo, and I do remember like playing with my dad. Like the only game my dad would play was Contra, and then I also had like some kind of wrestling game that we played together as well. But one year, I never owned a Super Nintendo. Never. Only always played Super Nintendo at like friends' houses or online, you know, when you could like download the games and play them that way. Or but I did get a Sega, I believe, for Christmas one year, because I also have like no memory of my childhood. I don't know, I've been hit in the head a bunch of times, so I don't know what the hell's going on there. But I got a Sega, and I remember, you know, this is back in your house, like nowadays every room in everyone's house pretty much has a TV, right? But like back then that wasn't necessarily the case. We had a TV in like the front room, and then my parents had a TV in their room, so could never set up my Nintendo or my Sega in the front room. So I set it up in their bedroom. And I remember sitting on the edge of their bed playing Sega and playing like the Jurassic Park game for Sega Genesis. And I remember playing it for a long time. And it was not a great game. It was like an okay game. I mean, there's raptors everywhere and shit. But that's probably like video game wise, my best like Christmas memory. That's definitely not my best Christmas gift though. I just don't know. I don't know.
If my mom, as you guys were talking, I was thinking about going back younger. And I know if my mom heard this, she would be like, that's definitely not your best one. Your best one would probably be when Santa got me Snake Mountain. And she'd be like, when you opened up that gift and you got Snake Mountain, you were just like, thank you, Santa. Like, she'll always, any like, and I'm sure I'm gonna get it like this Christmas when we go through gifts. She's gonna be like, yeah, I remember when you opened up that Snake Mountain thing and you thanked Santa so hard and this and that. But yeah, I probably, if I go younger, it's somewhere in the realm of like a He-Man thing, or because I can't remember Transformers getting for Christmas, but yeah, I can remember like the He-Man toys. So.
Legos probably for me, like big Lego sets for sure. It was like my shit, dude.
That was cool. I remember when I was in fifth grade, I got my first skateboard for Christmas, which was awesome. And it wasn't like a real one. It was like a Kmart one, and it had like a King Tut graphic on the bottom. And like, so it wasn't like a real skateboard. It was like a straight up like complete one from King Tut or from Kmart, you know? Uh-huh. And like that year in New York, like it didn't snow. So I was actually able to skateboard outside that day. And I remember going to school and like my friends that already had skateboards and stuff being like, oh, what'd you get? I'm like, oh, it's this King Tut board. And they're like, well, it's not a real skateboard. Everyone was like bagging on me for it. And so like later on, like 6 months later, I was able to get my first real skateboard, which is a Birdhouse Tony Hawk model, which is like, I was like, yes, this is real. But I still had that King Tut I gave to my friend. He still has it. So it's still around.
That's pretty cool. That's bad. Be a good wall mount. Take the mount it on your wall, that King Tut. That's a good question though. I, man,
it's out there. So next question is from our buddy Scott Palachek. Scott was actually on the podcast back in October, you know, with his book Marcus. So, and Zach will be getting his copy soon because I sent that to, off to him from New York Comic Con. Scott asked, Disney settled with Steve Ditko's estate. Do you think they should compensate past creators for all that stuff?
That's tough, man. It's tough. You know, I was thinking about this. We were talking about a different news article that kind of came out, and I was running down the idea of creators and creators working for the big two. And then, like, you know, it's so tough, man. Like, I get the frustration, and like, obviously this is kind of going down a rabbit hole of like the founding of Image, right? With all those guys being frustrated with like their creations and then not having any rights to them. And like, I totally understand that idea. But and I also kind of, and I'm not really, don't want to side with like big corporations, but I also understand like big corporations as well. Like being like, hey, dude, like we set the groundwork here to allow you to do that. Like you don't get rights to these characters. I don't know. It's so tough, dude. It's really tough. And I always come back to, and this may be really unfair, but I always come back to this because this feels like to me the most quintessential like topic when it comes to creator-owned characters. Rob Liefeld's like claim to fame of Deadpool to me is like utter bullshit because he created this character that is nothing like the modern character. Like if anyone deserves rights to Deadpool, it's Joe Kelly, in my opinion, because he's the one who did the fourth wall. He's the one who made him like comedic. So to hear like, you go back and you read like original, like New Mutants and X-Force, like that's not Deadpool, bro. Like not at all. Any of that stuff is not like, it wasn't until after Joe Kelly. So I kind of always, that always gets me where I'm like, Liefeld bugs me with that shit. Like, dude, you should be, if anyone's sharing like a title with that or like a co-creator, it should be Joe Kelly. But in terms of like the, what you asked the question, it's so tough, man. Only the big ones, I guess. I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, first, Rob's awesome. I love Rob. I've done work with Rob. Like, he's such a cool dude. And he did, like, I firmly believe that he did create Deadpool because if he didn't do what he did, guys like Joe Kelly wouldn't have like anything to work off of, which is like this. I mean, you could say the same thing about Superman too, right? Like the Superman that we know now is not the one created by Siegel and Schuster. Mm-hmm. The one Siegel and Schuster created is like basically a completely different character. Yeah. Like he beats the crap out of like normal people. He doesn't fly, you know, there's so many, he's more of like a pulp dude. Right. So like, but I think that you should like, personally, I think whoever creates the character, like they should have some sort of stake and royalty in it. Like I really do. Like even if it's like small, there should still be something because like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of the practices back in the day were like super predatory with like those guys like in the 50s, 60s, 70s. It was awful, you know? And guys like Rob and Todd and those guys, like they actually reaped the benefits of that era when like Marvel was giving them percentage ownership, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like, yeah. And like, so yeah, I mean, those guys created a lot of, I feel like that's why there was so much cool stuff being made in the 80s and 90s was because they had this desire to do so, you know? And like when they made Image, like all the imagination, like those guys like Rob and Todd and Jim, all those guys had, like, I miss that. I miss that era of when people were just like make stuff. And it feels like people are more like gun shy now to like make new things, like especially for Marvel and DC, you know?
Yeah,
because it doesn't seem to they don't seem to have that sort of compensation package anymore.
No, it's true. I mean, especially with like all the with like companies like Image and all these creator owned companies, like why would you give your good ideas to a company you're not going to have the rights to, right? Like, so you can like same thing. Like, I'm not going to create a new character for Marvel DC. I'll just wait and do it on Image, which totally makes sense to me. But I don't know. Yeah, definitely. Obviously, you're more in the field than we are. So you're. Your stance is definitely, you know, better than ours. I just, that's so tough for me because I don't want the big two to stop losing. I'm with you. I don't want the big two to stop losing like new characters. Like let's create new stuff. Stop color swapping and palette swapping. It feels like Mortal Kombat right? Like it's just,
dude, I mean,
here's a blue ninja, a yellow ninja.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really do think that's why like they have like the mantle swaps nowadays, you know, like where it's like, well, this guy's now Spider-Man. This guy's now whoever, you know, I think it's because it's twofold. It's the companies don't really want to try to break a new character. And then creators don't really want to give like their ideas away
right.
for something that they're not going to reap the benefit of, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like I do feel like the 80s and 90s was the last time we got like just a deluge of like really great new characters. Rob made a shitload of like great characters for Marvel, you know, like Domino, Cable, Deadpool, Shatterstar, like boom, that's like huge. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and did Jim Lee make Gambit? I think. I'm not sure. I mean, Todd made Venom.
Claremont made Gambit. Yeah.
Claremont.
Jimmy X-Men 266.
Who's drawing that? Was it Jim or was it?
Jim did the cover. I can't remember who did the interior.
I'm not sure. But yeah, but like
people yelling at us now. I can just imagine people are yelling at us, listening to us. They're like, "How do you not know who did that?"
Yeah. No, but I
best for sure.
Yeah, to me that was like the best era of comics. Mm-hmm. Like I'm gonna like die on that hill, and it's so weird to think about. Like I was listening to a podcast earlier today talking about Star Wars, and like there's more distance from now to when Episode One came out than from when the original Star Wars came out. To the re-release in the 90s. Mm. And like, that's insane to me, you know, that seems like so crazy, but
you're talking to two dudes in their 40s, bro. Stop bringing shit like that up, man. Okay. Like, you're real depressed. Just turned 40, bro. And you're like, oh, there's more distance now. Like, shut up.
Yeah. It was
no 90s is like peak culture, bro. It was great. Like the clothes, the comics, the music, dude, everything was like the best.
I always send Justin stuff on Instagram. I'm like, of people wearing JNCO jeans. And I'm like, let's bring it back, bro. Let's just bring back JNCO.
Dude. And let's coming back, bro. No, dude, for real. Like the baggy stuff's coming back. Like, yeah. I've been seeing it like everywhere. The same, like, yeah, man, it's coming back for sure.
I want to be a 40-year-old father married wearing JNCO jeans. Just in like regular everyday life, just like, what's up, dude? I'm putting whatever I want in these pockets will fit in here.
With that dude with like a fire head on the back.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
I need, God, since you're talking about skateboards, I'm sure. Oh God, who was it? Birdhouse. That was a company, right? Birdhouse.
Yeah.
I used to go to like PacSun and, mm-hmm. and buy every shirt, every graphic tee. Like they were just cool shirts, like the hot girl, the cartoony shirts. I literally owned so many Birdhouse shirts that I refused to throw them out. Like in the early 2000s, I was like, no, they're still good, even though they're like falling apart. Like, what I want. That's what I want to come back. That and Blind and like.
Do you remember No Fear? Do you remember
that? Oh yeah. No Fear? Oh dude.
I still have a No Fear shirt from like when I was in middle school. Like it's in my drawer right now, and it's like. It's got like two like dragons on the back with like a Japanese kanji in the middle. It's like the most 90s looking thing ever, but it's like so sick. Like,
no,
and I still wear it around like outside. Yeah.
Dude,
that's pretty awesome.
I guess, I mean, you know, back to the topic, like the creator stuff, it's tough, dude. It really is, you know, and like we've been talking about it a lot on like kind of almost every article we've been talking about the past couple months. It's kind of like touched on that, like the state of comics, so to speak, right? Like everything like Mark Miller's been in the news about is like touching on that as well, where it's like Marvel DC, like you kind of said, somewhat predatory, you know, practices when it comes to like paying people and rights and stuff like that. And it's killing the market and, you know, everyone talking about, are we going to go through the crash again and blah, blah, blah. And it definitely feels, you get like certain things in Marvel, like, X-Men wise, for example, like Hickman coming in and changing like the X-Men, you know, that was great. Like that was a status quo change, which has been like amazing. And it's really almost like what you'd wait for now in Marvel, someone to come through like that, or like Al Ewing with Immortal Hulk, right? You know, Donny Cates with Venom, like those kind of arcs, but they're so few and far between. And you collect and read, like, and I'm not trying to be an asshole, but you collect and read a lot of garbage in between until you get to these like big like character developing arcs that really like push a character forward. And I talk about Donny Cates when it comes to a character, like, right, Venom's created, but then Donny Cates, in my opinion, 20-40 years from now, and let's say nothing changes with the characters, and you ask me who's the most influential writer on Venom, and I'm like, it's Donny Cates, period. I don't care who the creator is, he's the one who changed him, he's the one that kind of made him different and broke it out of the mold. And but like, what does he get for that? Almost nothing, right? So it's kind of unfortunate.
Well, I mean, he created that villain, didn't he? Null.
Yeah,
I mean, no. Right, so they moved into Crit Null. Yeah. So I mean that would be the character that they create. Like I've been talking about this with my friends a lot recently, like in the last couple of years, and like part of what I'm, this is like a double-edged sword. I want to ask your opinion on this is like, how would you feel if like all of these characters, like their stories came to an end? Mm. Like, cause like we were talking about, like, I was talking to my friends about this and how like manga is like blowing up and stuff. And like, you look at Dragon Ball Z, right? Like Goku has like, there's a beginning and like a straight through, like you can read the entire story, right? Up until now, there's not like different versions, not different timelines. There's not like, it's just one straight through, like that's his story, right? And like the fact that these characters in the Western comic industry are sort of perpetually like, they can never really change or end. Like they almost become different characters. Like it's like the X-Men up until like the 2000s feels like a completely different character set to me than what they are now, you know? Like, and it's like, part of me wonders if like, well, what if Superman's story ended and like people just came up with a new character to take a spot, and like it wasn't so much as like we have to perpetually have this in motion and like change things, but not really change things and always reset it. Like, I feel like that's where that feeling of like what actually matters
right.
in these stories anymore, because so much stuff starts to contradict each other and like mm-hmm. different versions and different timelines. And like, and I'm not saying one's right or another. It's just like a thought. Exercise, I guess, because like I don't know, like One Piece, because we just, me and my wife just watched the One Piece show, and like we both like were like, holy shit, this is great. And I started like, we started watching the anime and stuff, and like it's like there's like one story for that. It's not like there's all these different versions of the character. So I don't know, it's the thing that makes American comics like so strong is that they're so adaptable, but I feel like it's also something that could it's also be one of their biggest weaknesses too. Yeah. Yeah, because there is no like definitive version. It's like it's so easy to jump off or jump on. Like they're very accessible to jump on, but they're also so easy to jump off of too. Because like when something changes that you don't like, you're like, well, I've got all this other stuff that I've got versions of, you know?
Yeah, you know what it is too. And I think with manga and the West, and I don't know who, and I don't know if it was said on this podcast by somebody, and I'm not going to take credit for this, but they said that the way a lot of the manga and anime stuff is done is like, once the creator dies or kind of is done with the story, you're never going to see that again, you know, like,
yeah,
whatever, like the original Yu-Gi-Oh, the creator passed away. So you're never going to see anything new of like Yugi. Like you're going to see Yu-Gi-Oh mm-hmm. EX, and it'll be different characters and different time stories and stuff like that. But you'll never see those original characters because it's like that story is done. So I think if the creator of Dragon Ball Z dies, like you'll never get Goku anymore and Vegeta and Trunks. Like that's what someone said, that's the reason why certain things have never continued, even though people love them. You know, you and I are big Gundam fans, but the Gundam series has always changed over the years. It's never been the same.
Yeah.
You know, characters, you know, and that's, but yeah, I love that question because it's the truth. Like why if someone, you know, I guess it is, we get death in comics, right? But how long does the character stay dead? Until someone's like, all right, it's been 2 months since they need to resurrect them.
Some
people just never really resurrected, you know. Obviously, you know, we've talked about it before, like
Uncle Ben.
Jason, yeah,
Uncle never Ben's bring one. Back Uncle Ben. Never. Ben Stacy, poor bastard.
Technically not back, even though, you know, there's an alternate Earth. You know,
Jason, I mean, Bucky Todd. Was never supposed to come back either.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah, him as well. Phoenix was never supposed to come back.
We talked about. I love that question, and it's a really like double edged sword one, because this is something Justin and I always talk about, like what's the perfect arc of a story, like right in like the comics, and it's like, you know, 15-30 issues. We both read Once in Future, and we loved it. And you're so like, man, this is so awesome, but it has a definitive start, middle, beginning, end, and it's done. And I really like that concise storytelling. Does it suck when it ends because you can't come back to it? Yeah, it does. But that's kind of what also makes it so strong, is you have this, it's like kept inside you of like, man, I really love that story and I got to go revisit it. So in a way, I almost, you want an end, right? And that's what Marvel has done, and kind of like in a way they do, like, you know, like the X-Men the End or the Avengers the End. We got what Avengers Twilight's coming out here soon, so they're like, hey, here's a peek at like what the ending could be for these stories. But you know, you love them. I love X-Men so much. Do I want them to end? No, of course not. But like, would it be kind of cool to see it end? Yeah, of course. That'd be kind of cool as well. But that's tough, man. I don't know.
Like, think about that. Like, I mean, this is obviously something that would change now, right? But like in the history of like comics, right? Like if Marvel and DC and Dark Horse and all these companies, like if they were more of that sort of creator driven way, like things like The Boys or Invincible, right? Would maybe they would have been published from Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
If like, do you get what I'm saying? Like if Superman had an end,
yeah.
Maybe like those other, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just like a weird thing to think about. Cause it's so like radically different. Like how, like the Japanese model of comics is versus like the American model. Like it's like how they're produced, how they're distributed. Like it's so different. So like trying to like compare them is like kind of hard, but like that is through the storytelling aspect though, is like that is one of the things that I've wondered about, like, because like someone who's like new, like for me, like with One Piece, right? One Piece is old, like that, the start in like what, like 95 or something like that. And it's like, I know exactly where to start. You know what I mean? It's like volume one, boom, right there. And like, so I don't know. It's one of those, like, if someone just saw Batman, they're like, oh, I'm gonna start reading Batman. It's like, where do they start with Batman? You know, where do you start with that? I mean, X-Men does have X-Men's a little more clean. Cause it's like, I feel like all the Marvel characters, you can start in the 60s, you know, but then like, you can only get to a certain point before it all just sort of goes, you know,
right.
Like, everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's wild. I don't know. That's a very crazy question. So nuanced and like multi-layered, you know. But that's when we talk about complain about like everything, the multiverse stuff, right? Like it's just too much, man. Like, and I think that's my biggest thing. You mentioned it was like there's nothing's important anymore. It doesn't matter what happens because the next writer could come and be like, that didn't happen, you know, like check it out. I just rewrote that history there. And nothing seems, you tell me if someone's dying, death no longer matters at all. Like you're just like, okay, cool, he'll be back. So yeah, I don't know.
Damn. Yeah, I guess I never really thought about that, Ken. Like as a, you know, growing up watching a lot of anime, that's I've always watched anime, and it's always been like some series are like 20 episodes, 40 episodes, you know. Obviously some of them go on longer, and that's where, and like Zach said, like they always have a beginning and an end, and you never really think about that in comics. Like, you know, some of them are just so like, you're like, oh, this is still going. Like Dragon Ball Z is, yes, it's the longest running, right? And I think that and like, I don't know what else is like super long. Yeah, like that. Yeah. I mean, Bleach is, you know, Bleach was done for years. Right? And then they, you know, they came out with the Thousand Year War, which is phenomenal. But yeah, like even Attack on Titan, like that has an end. Like that was super popular for a while. So it's good that these series do eventually end, unlike, do I want to see Batman end? Hell no. Like, but sometimes some characters do need to come to an, I would think some characters do need to come to an end, even if they're, whether they're popular or not, to bring in new characters, because yes, the rosters just get so big where, you know, you have to have like another Crisis on Infinite Earths, like a whole multiverse war, and like just kill off people, introduce new people, to be honest. So
yeah.
Good question. Good little talk there. Last community question, and then we're gonna get into some something different. And who knows if this one will go pretty long. So newbie comics sent us a question. He goes with you know, obviously with comics and also cards being something that's been, you know, investment wise over the past couple of years. Yes, you know, with video games and VHS is taking off. Do you see any other collectibles exploding in 2024? Pogs, bro. It's all about the pogs.
The 90s are coming back, dude. So yeah, get your slammers ready.
Yeah. So Ken, you're a 90s guy like us. You know, what's something from the 90s that people should be collecting and investing in?
Oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, pogs, like those would probably be worth money because I feel like everybody threw them out, right? Like, yeah, I mean, do they even exist anymore? Right? Like, God, dude. Yeah, I remember pogs. I remember like you could get like just piles of them for like a quarter. Do you remember?
Yeah. Tube. Yeah. You get the tube, like a whole tube full of pogs.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, cards, obviously. I'm trying to think, like, I guess like 90s, like toys. I was talking to one of my friends about this too. Do you remember the G.I. Joe Mortal Kombat figures? Do you remember those? They were like from the 90s.
No.
They're like Mortal Kombat action figures, but they were like repaints of the G.I. Joes, like the old 90s ones. I remember like we were talking about, I'm like, oh yeah, I always wanted the reptile. He came with like, the only way he could get reptiles, he came with a boat. And my buddy looked it up on eBay, and it's like super expensive now to get that. I'm like, damn.
I'm looking at him right
so
now.
Who knows, man?
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's
the crappiest looking figures.
There it is. There's the boat, the Dragon MK1. Sick.
Oh, God. I can't imagine, you know, for like, what's the next thing to collect? You know, obviously, we talked about it, I think, last week. Like, people are grading CDs and vinyls now. CDs,
yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, I constantly, there's like a thrift store here in my town that sometimes I'll just go to because it's like right by the supermarket. I go in there and there's like a whole section of like CDs that are completely still sealed. Like, I'm like, do I buy these for like $2 or $3? Because is it going to be like the VHS thing where, you know, they're worth money now? Like,
VHS is popping off now.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, because people grade them. It's wild. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's insane. Like sealed VHSs are, you know, some of them are, you know, if it's those like first editions that came out, or just rare ones, you know, like first edition Disney's, like sealed. Yeah, you know, people grade.
They have to be sealed to be worth money.
Oh yeah, because it's the same thing like video games. It's, you know, some video games are rare. Yes, you know, even open, but sealed, it's like completely different. Because again, the same thing that I've said, games were meant to be opened and played. VHS's, DVDs were meant to be opened and watched. So the fact that someone still has it sealed, it's a little. You know, I was on an auction the other day and someone actually had a sealed copy of like it was a 4.0 OVA of Darkstalkers. They had the first volume and it was like sealed and graded. The thing only went off for like $30. I was just like, why didn't I bid? Like, that was probably worth it. Like, it's cool just to display it with like the video game. And I'm like, I didn't bid on it.
Yeah.
I've always wondered why there isn't more like, for like novels, you know, you can buy like an old school, like let's say like Jane Eyre first edition or whatever, like go for like buku bucks, right? Something like that. Like, why there's no kind of like grading for old school novel first editions, you know what I mean? Like, books being so prevalent, and obviously it's not uncommon to grade books, and we do it with CGC and comic books, but like actual physical novels, why are they not encapsulating some of these like really old first editions and first printings of books like that? Like, it's always been kind of strange.
Right around the corner.
You would think so, right? Because I mean, at some point the paper is going to shit, right? I mean, that's just
science.
Does the
CGC grading protect like paper from like degrading?
They can still age inside the encapsulation, but if you never like open it back up, right? Like, it's whatever it's sealed in, keep it that way. I think you can still get yellowing, you know, and definitely if you keep it in sunlight, it can yellow the pages and like wear them out as well.
The back cover. Yeah. Actually, that's a great thing, Zach. I'm pretty sure someone's listening and who has money and who's going to start a company for grading books. And that actually, you know,
that would be into.
Yes. You know, we're all collectors in something. We like all displaying certain things, you know, whether it's, you know, skateboards, omnibuses, video games, comics, toys. We love putting them in sealed cases, seeing a grade. Like, why aren't books? That's wild. Right? Like, that's actually a pretty, interesting thing.
How far away do you think we are from like old cell phones, like old iPods and stuff being
like,
graded?
Like Gen 1 type stuff? I mean, you would think.
Yeah,
right?
Like razors. No. Yeah.
Razor shit. Yeah.
Because like who still has those, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I've seen, like cameras or same thing, like old school cameras. They can go for good money, you know, and even if it's like early digital, my old Sony cameraman or Canon, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, anything anyone's interested in. My father-in-law, this is wild too. My father-in-law collects, he's completed his collection. He has every year, the state of New Mexico has made a license plate. And so he has all the New Mexico license plates. And if you think that's not expensive, you have no idea. Like, he went to like conventions and stuff about people who like collect license plates. And like, his full collection is probably hundreds of thousands of dollars, like worth that much. Cause there's people out there who collect that.
Are they all his, or is it like, was he getting his own license plate redone every year? Or was it?
No, like he went, like, you know, went back in time and got like he got the old ones, like whatever 1912 was, and he got those license plates. So like whatever year New Mexico first printed a license plate, and he's got them all up on his wall in his garage. I mean, it's wild shit, dude. But nice. There's a niche for everything. There's a collector out there for almost everything. Wow. So you just got to find the person who's willing to pay the money, I guess, right?
Pretty much. Good question. Yeah, I think books would be a cool thing to get graded, and that'll be the next thing coming up, popping off for 2024. So yeah. Great questions, everybody. Thanks so much. You know, you could always drop us notes over at on our Instagram, Zach's, mine, or the Comic Con podcast. You can always send us emails to the Comic Con podcast at gmail.com. Let's kind of switch it up. No comic talk tonight. We're not going to do any, we're not going to do any reads. We're not going to do any articles. We're actually going to switch it up. We got Ken on here because we always talk about bringing Ken on when we want to talk some video games. So we're going to talk some video games for the rest of the night. So thanks, everybody, for listening for this podcast. Let's see how many people we lose. But let's kind of switch it over to some video game talk because we have Ken on. We're all gamers here. So I just want to start off.
The Venn diagram between people who play video games and read comic books is a perfect circle.
Right.
So, no one's going to be dropping off.
But I just want to see the analytics of this episode and how everyone listens, and then it just completely goes down.
The 45 mark.
Yeah. It's like 45 minute mark. Everyone's dropping off. So, but I kind of want to start off, and I told, I don't know if you've seen this, Ken. I told Zach about this last week. I saw it. It's on. I have it on Amazon Prime, because I also have Paramount Plus. It's called Console Wars. It was a documentary that came out 3 years ago. Have you ever watched it?
No.
So,
Prime?
Yeah. So you have to have, either if you have Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
If you either have Paramount Plus or if you have Paramount Plus through Amazon Prime, because that's where I watch it, through Amazon.
Okay.
Through like the Rio Quack. But it's an amazing documentary. It came out in 2020. It's basically, I'm going to read the synopsis. It's a film about the 90s console war between Nintendo and Sega in the 16-bit era and the rise and fall of Sega in the home console market. So it's actually based off of Blake Harris's 2014 book. And it's so amazing to like watch because, you know, for all of us, you know, we grew up in that era of the original like Nintendo system and Super Nintendo and Genesis. And just you just get to hear all this background information of how like Nintendo was such a monopoly that they wouldn't allow any retailers to let any other video game system in their stores. So like Toys R Us, Walmart, Bradley's, Caldor, like they would be like, if Sega or TurboGrafx or any of these little like companies that had like that were trying to create a video game system, they were like, oh, you know, can we put like a 4-foot section in our store? Nintendo would be like, no, they're not doing it. No, we won't. You know, we'll give you X amount of money and we want these two rows. Cause you remember back in the day, there was just like a row of nothing but Nintendo. And you just get to see this whole background of this back and forth between how, you know, what Nintendo was doing, what Sega was doing. And it was so funny to watch. And this kind of gives a little bit away, but so what Sega did at one point was they actually opened up a store. They took like a warehouse directly across the street from the Walmart headquarters in Arizona. They opened it up and it was like a Sega store, and they just had tons of consoles there where anybody could just come in and play. So like Walmart employees from the headquarters would come over. They would come and just like play the video games. People would drive. They put up all these billboards like all around the area in the town, and people would just come just to like play, you know, Sega Genesis, like as it was just coming out. And then finally Walmart was like, okay, we'll give you like a 4-foot space. And, but it's just so wild to see like all this guerrilla marketing the way they did and things that, you know, Genesis was trying to do that Nintendo wasn't going to do, obviously with like games like Mortal Kombat. Like when Mortal Kombat came out on the Genesis, there was blood.
Oh yeah.
And it came out on Super Nintendo. Yeah. It was like green. It was green. Like they didn't want to do this adult look.
Yeah.
It's like an hour and a half documentary. If anybody ever gets to check it out, please, if you've seen it, you know, let us know. But that's kind of how I wanted to start off this, just to talk about like video games and stuff. You know, it was amazing to watch. It really gave me the feels and just so much of that was going on in the 90s. You're like, oh my God, I lived through this. You're like,
I would almost say that Mortal Kombat for Sega was like the thing that really launched Sega. It was the one thing that like set everything apart, because Mortal Kombat was such like a fueled to the fire, and then you were like, hey, everyone wanted to see the blood because you've never seen that before, and there was one system that had it and it was Sega. And I mean that probably like fueled most of their sales early on.
Yeah, it was definitely. Yeah,
I remember
it was that definitely.
Because it was so weird. Because like I remember Sega being like this powerhouse, right? Mm-hmm. When we were kids, it was like you were either a Nintendo kid or a Sega kid.
Yeah.
And then like when the PlayStation came out, it seems like that like all shifted. Like, right. And then Sega just kind of fell off the map. It was very strange.
But Dreamcast was like the last thing they did, right? Sega Dreamcast was probably like the last console they put out.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even remember Game Gear as well as like the color. You're like, hey, look, you guys have Game Boy? Awesome. Mm-hmm. Hold my beer. Here's color. You know, and it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Sega doesn't mess around.
Even even Game Boy Color didn't look as good as the Game Gear. No, it looked horrible. Remember? Yeah.
Game Boy was like, yeah. Oh, yeah? Well, we got a magnifying glass you can put on the Game Boy. It makes it better. Yeah. Like, get out of here, dude.
Well, because they even talk about that like at, you know, this, what is it, CES, like the Electronics Expo that they would do. You know, because when Genesis came out, they were like, oh, it's 16-bit, and people were like, oh, there's not a lot of color. And they would actually have Sega Genesis on one TV and Super Nintendo on another TV, and they said to like the journalists, they're like, all right, which game has more color? And it would be like, they would just show some random, I think it was like Sonic, and on the other side it was like Super Mario Kart, and you're just like, wow, there's a lot more colors in Genesis than there were Super Nintendo. And to be honest, they were kind of right. Like Super Nintendo games were more like 12D than like 16-bit. Yeah, 12-bit than like 16-bit. And it's just wild to think of all the massive games that have come out. Like they really innovated. Sega really innovated a lot of stuff. You know, they really were the first ones to do like the online stuff with, realistically, like the Dreamcast was ahead of its time. And I still love that system. Just so much that they were doing. And I mean, they don't really go into that, obviously, because it's more of the 90s. But yeah, like you said, like Game Gear was a powerhouse for the system. And, you know, Nintendo hit their stride. Or, you know, they kind of hit brick walls. They tried to innovate things. Like, remember Virtual Boy?
Yes.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, I do remember that. Oof. That was rough.
That was so bad. Yeah. I remember going to like Toys R Us and like sticking my head and playing. And you're just like, you'd come out of it like a headache.
Yeah. That was rough. Yeah.
So Ken, you were talking about go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I remember Sega, what was their first 3D system? Was it the Saturn?
Yeah.
That was their answer to the PlayStation, was the Sega Saturn.
Saturn.
I remember our Toys R Us had Virtua Fighter set up on it. And I remember thinking like this was like the most realistic thing in the entire world. This is so like good.
The
like,
cube, right? And when they all cubed up? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Sega.
There were so many good games on every system. That's kind of like the wheelhouse that we've been running.
Do you remember on PlayStation 1 a game called Battle Arena Toshinden?
I was seriously thinking that in my head as you were talking about Virtual Fighter. So yes, of course I remember that
game. Really? Yes, dude. That was the game they had set up at Toys R Us for the PlayStation, and that was sweet. And then like years later, when I finally got my PS2, I actually found that at a GameStop, and I was like, I need this. Like, no booklet, nothing. It was just the disc, and I was like, hell yeah.
Do you ever play? I remember playing it in the arcades, but I can't remember what console. I think it was on Genesis. It was probably on one of the Genesises. Pit Fighter.
Oh, it sounds really familiar.
No,
it's like a. It's literally like a back and forth. It was like a brawling game. And it was like almost like it was literally like Fight Club. Like the background was like all these guys standing around. And it was just like you just beat the crap out of everybody. It would have like.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. I don't think it came. No Sega. It was. Oh, yeah. It was on Genesis. Yeah.
OK. But yeah, like it was just such a weird fighting arcade game. And I remember like playing that like in my early years. But like, I want to go around the horn on this one and just kind of like, just, you know, gaming moments like in our youth. Cause I really want to do like different segments and stuff. And I was talking to Jeff Comic Dunes about this and how you guys were saying, Ken, how like, you know, like you either were like a Genesis guy or a Nintendo guy. Like we didn't have a Genesis. Like I was a Nintendo guy. Like I had Nintendo, Super Nintendo all the way up. And in my, like, I can't remember. I was like middle school. It was like sixth grade. Right around the corner from our middle school, we had this like a community center, and we would actually go there after school from like 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock. And like, you could go and you'd like whatever, play like knock hockey. They had like a big like electronic like basketball hoop thing that you could like shoot in for fun, but it was like the only place to go. And they actually had a Genesis there that you could play that was like free. Like people would go, it was kind of like a place to go where kids wouldn't get in trouble. And they actually had Mortal Kombat. And I swear, like kids would go there every day after school. And you're just like, I can't believe they allow this to like have this game here. And I remember just the fact that like you would just go there and it would just be sitting there on the TV. And like no quarters, no nothing. Like they would just let you go and play. And it was just the best thing. Cause I'm like, I can't afford like a Genesis. And I'm not gonna ask my mom to buy me like another system. And I already have a Nintendo and a Super Nintendo. So going there was like always the greatest thing. Like after school, like, yes, I'm gonna play Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
What about you guys? Any fun young kid stories of gaming?
There was this in Boise, Idaho, there was like a chain right down the street from my house. It's called Fred Meyer, and I'm trying to liken it to probably like a super Walmart, you know, like a large Walmart where it had everything, like groceries, clothes, books, gardening, all that stuff. But it always had like an electronics area. And you'd go in there, and it was the same thing I'm sure you guys saw growing up, and everyone listening growing up, you know, where they had the PlayStation hooked up and you could go play and you'd wait in line. Mm. There'd be a bunch of kids playing. And I remember going down there because we'd ride our bikes down there. It wasn't too far from the house. And I never owned a PlayStation 1 until like late. I think I've had a PlayStation 2 before I had a 1, and then I came back later. But I remember playing like Twisted Metal. I remember playing, they always had Twisted Metal on there. That's the one that comes to my mind all the time, is like go with your friends and then just play Twisted Metal, like fights. Oh, who wins? And then you get to go on, you get to stay, or you had to like go leave or something. But like that non-owning and like kind of like, just to follow, I guess, the story you had, that's kind of the thing that comes to mind, is playing games in this like electronics area of Fred Meyer, like all the time. So that's what I got.
Yeah. I mean, I remember always going to Toys R Us and like whatever they had hooked up, like, and we're like, cause I had a Super Nintendo, then I had an N64, and then I got a PS2. Like that was like my trajectory. But I remember whenever I'd go to Toys R Us, I'd always play like whatever system I didn't have that have. So like, I remember like playing like Vector Man, whatever the Sega one. Sega, yeah. 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 Killer Instinct was one that I always remember playing. But dude, thinking about like going somewhere, like I remember our local like skating, like it was like a place where they had like roller skating and like an arcade and like a water slide, like one of those kind of places. Mm. And they had the X-Men arcade game there, and that was like, that ate up all my allowance, man. That X-Men arcade game,
great game.
It was so much fun.
Yeah. I wish I had room. Like, I really wish I had room down here to have like one of those arcade one-ups. Like, I would totally get the X-Men one's really cool, or like they have the ones that have like three games. Like, I like the Marvel vs. Capcom, so it's like X-Men vs. Street Fighter, Marvel vs. Capcom 1, and I think Marvel Super Heroes is on there. Like, those are just so cool. Or I would just buy, like, I would spend the money and get, like, a modded one that would have, like, thousands of games on it. I just
think I have a Turtle, the Turtles one that's, like, Turtles Arcade, Turtles in Time. Maybe just those two.
Nice.
And it was cool, but I rarely played it, man. Like, you first got it, and I was like, this is so awesome. And then, like, I never really played
it. Nostalgic, you beat it once.
I think, like, the other, like, memory I have, too, and, like, to piggyback off what Ken said, like, trajectory of, like, consoles, right? Like, I had the Nintendo, and then I went to Sega, and then I was on the N64 for a really long time. And then I think like it was PlayStation 2, man. It was when Metal Gear Solid came out. And I was like, I have to get this game. Like, this
two?
Is the game I have to
play. Metal Gear Solid 2?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, this is the game I have to play. I'm dying to play this game. And I did everything I could to finally get that PlayStation 2. And remember when PlayStation 2 came out, it was like space travel, and so far ahead of its time it was at that, what it felt like in terms of consoles. And dude, I remember just eating that game up. Like, I loved it so much.
Dude, so that's like, my favorite Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah. Oh, it's the best.
That was the first one. Some people, that one's controversial because some people don't like Raiden. I love Raiden because he was the first character that I ever played as Metal Gear Solid. So like,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. I like that one too. It's that, and that's when they kind of like, what, you're playing as him the whole time. You don't know it's him at first. Is that right? Or did you know at the beginning? I can't remember.
No, I think.
No, it's like you play as Snake for like the very first part, and then it jumps, and then you play as Raiden. Yeah.
Yeah.
But doesn't they call him Snake right in the beginning? Don't they like? He's codenamed Snake.
I think they call him Raiden, and that's when Ocelot is like the bad guy, right? At the end of the one. It's...
Well, yeah, but I think like when you have like a
ninja sword fight at the end.
Yeah, Liquid Snake, I think it shows up. Or yeah. Shit's crazy.
Gray Fox.
Oh, yeah.
And what is it? It's Metal Gear Ray in that one, right? I think it's Ray.
I can't remember.
Rex. I can't remember. One and between Metal Gear Solid 1 and Metal Gear Solid 2, it's Ray or Rex, and they swap back and forth. I can't remember specifically, but what's really interesting, and I'm sure, I don't know if Ken, if you saw this, or and Zach, they decided to finally cancel E3. So like, it's no longer going to be a thing. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting because I feel like E3 was always the one thing that I would look forward to. Similar to like San Diego Comic-Con for us in comics. Like comics, we always look for like, oh, San Diego Comic-Con is going to be like the big thing for comic books. And like E3 would come. And that's when like all the publishers and everybody would get together and they would be showing off the great trailers or gameplay and this or that. And now that it's not doing it, I feel like it's fine, because I mean, in a world of media that we are, like all these publishers can just have their own little conventions, and you know, I'm kind of happy with it because I mean, Sega does their little, or not Sega, like Sony does their thing, Microsoft does theirs, Nintendo does their Nintendo Day, and you know, we get all these upcoming games. The Video Game Awards were just last week. I mean, it's wild to think about if comics would ever go that route, you know, or we're never going to get a Comic-Con and we just get all news like over the internet or like on YouTube. Like that's how they would do it.
Yeah. Saves money.
Yeah.
I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Cons are too much fun. Yeah.
Didn't DC do that once? I feel like DC did that.
They did during the pandemic. The fan is called Fandom Experience.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. I remember that. Did you guys play any of the games that were like Game of the Year, Ken? Like, what are you gaming right now?
What were the games?
So, I'm still playing Final Fantasy 16.
Oh, that's right.
I think I'm close to the end. I can only play it when my wife's home though, because she's like into the story, so she like yells at me if I like progress. Like she's like, you can do all your side quests and monster hunts on your own, but like when it comes to like the actual progression, I have to wait till she's there watching. So I'm still doing that. And then what else did I play this year? I mean, I've been playing that since June. That's like literally the only thing I've played since June. So, but before that, I played the new Zelda for a little bit, and then I also played the Hogwarts game before then. Both those games I got very little into I got the Hogwarts game and just never had time to get into it. And then like Zelda came out, like, well, I'm gonna start Zelda now. And then Final Fantasy 16 came out. I'm like, okay, I got to beat this before Remake Part 2 or Rebirth comes out in February, because I know that's gonna be like,
yeah,
my focus.
Speaking of Rebirth, I actually just pre-ordered the Deluxe Edition today on GameStop.
What do you get? What do you get with Deluxe Edition?
Steelbook,
yeah.
Probably a poster.
Is that the one with the giant Sephiroth statue?
No, that's sold out. I wish I could get that. That was cool. Though. No. It's only it's basically just I think it's like the game itself, and then a steelbook for the game and the soundtrack and something else. It's it was only $100. Nice. So it's like only like, you know, $30 more, because I mean games are so expensive nowadays anyway. So
yeah.
You know, for literally the price, I'm like, well, I might as well just get this here, you know, because I'm never going to get, there's no way I'm going to be able to get that one. I'm on here right now. What is it? It is the our mini art book, mini soundtrack and steelbook. Yeah. I mean, for $30 more, I'm good with it, since I can't get that.
Nice.
Good old. But yeah. Did you play a lot of Zelda, the new one, or no?
I got into the part where you first find about the depths. So it's pretty much still toward the beginning. It's like I got off the main floaty area and I talked to Princess Zelda, and then like I just found like the caves where you go into, and then that like totally fucked me up, because like it got really hard, and that's kind of killed my enthusiasm on it a little bit.
Because I'm trying, so I'm currently playing on the Switch, I'm playing Mario RPG. And I've talked about this before. Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars from SNES was like one of my favorite games, for the fact that it was like a Nintendo Squaresoft collab, right? It was like literally Final Fantasy. So playing it now is just, it's awesome to look at. It's awesome to play, because it's same thing. It's the same exact game. It's just updated with obviously current graphics. but I have never played Breath of the Wild, nor have I tried Tears of the Kingdom. And I don't know if I should play Tears of the Kingdom first, like which is the better one. I know, Zach, you've kind of beat Breath of the Wild and haven't really touched on
Breath of the Wild.
Like to be honest, I would really just go back and play like Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword, or I'll just go Ocarina of Time.
No. So
Zach, did you play?
Go ahead, man. What?
Wait, did you play Tears yet or no?
I haven't, because I did Breath of the Wild late, man. Like I played it early this year and it was fun. I enjoyed it. I know people are like saying, "Oh, it's the best Zelda of all time." I'm not there with it. And then I had to kind of take a break before I got into Tears of the Kingdom. I'm going to play it. I just haven't got to it. I'm actually playing Skyward Sword right now. And I'm not crazy about it either. It's not going to rank high on my Zelda like game lists. But I do want to play. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, the thing about Tears is that I feel like it's like people were raving about it this year, but I feel like it's way too similar to Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
It's like the same map almost. Like, it's like you're kind of doing the same thing. Like it almost felt like I was just playing Breath of the Wild again. And like, maybe I just didn't get deep enough, because there's that whole element of like, you have to like craft stuff with like your arm and like glue stuff together. And like, I wasn't really having fun with that. That was more like tedious to me than like fun. So like, maybe it just like wasn't clicking with me in that way. Cause I really did like Breath of the Wild a lot. I mean, I think that Ocarina of Time still will always be my favorite, but that might just be nostalgia too, you know?
No, so Breath of the Wild was fun. And I might like, it's so weird to say this because I love open world type games, and it's like open world Zelda, right? In a way, probably like, I mean, Ocarina of Time, I guess, was kind of like that, but not the same. But I felt like, and it's the same thing we talk about with any open world game, is you lose story when you make it open world. And Breath of the Wild is kind of was like that as well, where there were so many tedious things. Like I hated the fact that like your swords broke all the time.
It
was annoying, especially like the master sword. Like, why the hell am I getting the master sword then, dude, if I do like four swings and the shit breaks on me? Like, it just, like you said, tedious is the best word. And then I had read about, you know, Tears of the Kingdom as well, that you can like build different stuff. People are building like, oh, look at this. Like, I built the Millennium Falcon or something, like a ship. You can build like your own
vehicles and stuff. Yeah, if you're really creative mind, you could do some wild.
I have no interest in doing shit like that. Like, if it doesn't move the story, or if it doesn't like really play a part in, like, what was the thing I didn't like about Breath of the Wild was all the side stuff you did didn't really enhance your character. Like, you go do Ocarina of Time, right? Go back to Ocarina, and you don't have to get the Goron sword, right? You can play the whole game with the Master Sword, but if you get the Goron sword, it's super powerful. Like, it actually makes your game different. There's a different gameplay, and doing different stuff makes it better. I feel like Breath of the Wild, half the side quests, if you can even call them side quests, actually, were like, it didn't matter, dude. It didn't really enhance the story at all. It didn't do anything. I found that disappointing. But
yeah, I mean, that is the thing, is like, you're right. Like, when it becomes so open world, like Breath of the Wild, like the story was suffering hard for it. Right. And I think that's why I like Ocarina the best, is because I feel like it's the cleanest story of all the Zelda stories. It's like, it's so like cinematic. And like, I'm definitely with you, where like, I need there to be a good story with video games. Cause if it's just you, like, just if it's purely just about the gameplay and like, I don't care about the characters, then like, I don't have much investment in playing the game itself, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I need there to be like investment in the characters and the gameplay in the, so the story. I mean, so yeah, I mean, I would agree with everything you said about Breath of the Wild. I mean, I do think it's fun, but like the swords breaking was definitely like a bummer for sure. And like,
annoying, dude. It was so annoying. Cause then like, is a like, lot of weapons like, didn't have much difference either, you know? Like, so it was like, why am I getting all these weapons? Like, it's almost like an oversaturation of weapons. It didn't really matter either.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And this one, it's like it's the same thing, but you can like bind the weapons together. So like, you like stupid looking. So you get like your sword, and then you bind like a rock to the tip of it. And like, it's like a sword with a rock. It's like stuff like that, where I'm like, this doesn't even look cool. Like, this is like
Zelda, goofy looking. Zelda's a sword, a shield, a bow, a boomerang, bombs, and a hook shot. That's what it is, dude. Maybe you're throwing a slingshot too. Like, that's all you get. There's nothing more. Like, everyone, I don't give a shit. Make 20 of them, make them the same. Don't fuck up. Don't mess it up. Yeah. Like, that's all you need with Zelda. So.
I mean, dude, how dope would like how they made Final Fantasy VII Remake? How dope would it be if Nintendo was like, fuck it. We're going to make an Ocarina of Time remake. Man. But like with that, we're going to have a full voice actor list. Link will finally talk, which like, dude, it drives me nuts that Link doesn't talk. This is 2023.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for him not talking. Like back in the N64 days, I was like, this is pure laziness. The Link is not talking because fucking Star Fox talks. Why can't Link talk? Like it drove me insane. And the fact they like keep doing that, and like it almost like it makes him seem like he's like, it makes it almost seem like it's a character trait. Like he can't talk. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I don't like that. Like,
yeah. I hope I don't offend anyone when I say this, but sometimes, and it's with Skyward Sword, when he has conversations, is this, and then you think about all the other games. Every time someone says something to Link, he just sits there and he's like, huh? And it's like almost has like learning disabilities. You know what I mean? You're like, what's wrong with this guy, like, dude?
Yeah. Like, but like when you talk to people, they like, their half of the conversation is as though he's saying something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like they're talking and then they'll ask a question and they'll be like, should I go here? And then like it goes to Link and he's like, and then they're like, you're right, I will go here. You know what I mean? And it's like, it just drives me nuts that like he doesn't say anything.
He just seems like he's like the dumbest hero of all time in a way too, because like he's not making any choices in the decision. It's just, he's like, well, I'm just here with a sword, you know? Like, and it doesn't bode well for a live action either, you know? So.
Well, dude, the explanation that Nintendo gives is like, oh, we want you to imagine that you're Link. It's like, well, that's all well and good, except like, I'm not an elf. So like, no matter what he sounds like, I will never like, I feel like him talking won't break the immersion of you feeling like you know what I mean? Like if anything, it's only going to make it better, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like I'm Solid Snake when I'm playing Metal Gear and he, that guy talks like, I'm like, dude, I'm creeping on walls and just executing people. This is my life now. This is who I am. Accept it. You know?
I feel like I'm Virgil when I'm playing Devil May Cry 5.
Devil May Cry.
I feel like a badass with a sword. Like that's the type of game where I'm just like, I can immerse myself in. And I'm just like, I feel like this character or Dante or Nero, like they're all good. And Ocarina of Time, like just as far as the story, like even like Sheik, like to find out who that was at the, you know, by the end of the game, you're just like,
blew my mind.
So awesome.
Wow. You're like, this is the first time where she's not, a spoiler now at this point, but like that
if you haven't played
that it's Princess Zelda, you're like, what?
Yeah.
No, like,
yeah.
So good.
That blew my mind as a kid. That was crazy. Yeah.
So you know, we talked on the podcast about like obviously the live action Zelda, you know, who could you see as like playing Link?
If they who would I cast as Link? I was talking to my wife about this. I think did you see the One Piece show?
The new One Piece? A little bit, like some episodes.
I need to watch that.
I think the guy who plays Zoro would be a badass Link. Okay. I think he would be sick. Did you ever see The Outer Banks on Netflix? That was another show that we watched. There's an actor on that I think would be a good Link too.
I know though that it's like I think my niece has watched that show, right? It's like
National Treasure with like surfers.
Yeah,
like National
Treasure with surfers, right? Teenagers.
Yeah,
that's
exactly what it is.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But one of the actors on there, I think, would be a pretty good Link too. But like, I think you need to go with like relatively unknown. You know, like not like major movie star.
Not Tom Holland.
No.
Or Chris Pratt.
Or Chris. No. See, the Tom Holland one drives me nuts because like he's like, I've yet to see him in a movie where he like conveys like stoic strength. And like, to me, like that's what Link is. Like, he's like, he shouldn't, like Link shouldn't be funny at all. Like he shouldn't be like a goober. He should be like insanely intense, you know? Like, cause like, in the games, the only noise he's like, like that's all he does, you know? So I imagine him being like very intense and like just badass and driven, but I don't know, maybe that's just me. Maybe other people are like, no, you should be like making Star Wars jokes like Tom Holland. I don't know.
How about the kid from Dune, the kid who plays the new Willy Wonka?
He's too dark-headed though.
Well, I mean,
we need Ken's hair for that, but I don't know, dude. He's great. What's his name? Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet. I mean, I could see it. I could.
But
see
yeah, again, it has to be. I would say somebody that's like completely unknown. And the same thing goes for like Zelda. Like you can't have some well-known actress play. Like I would want more first timers. You know, yeah. Same thing.
That you get like. Like yeah, yeah. I feel like you make Link and Zelda relatively unknowns, and everyone else you fill out with like big names, like yeah. Ganondorf. You make like a really big movie star,
yeah.
Or like the big Goron can yeah. be like a big character, like a big voice actor yeah. or something. Yep. The Zoras and Impa, yeah. And, yeah. And you got to do Ocarina, right? I mean, like that's the story you do.
Yeah,
that's the like you said the cleanest
for sure. Story.
Yeah, it's the only one.
Yeah,
and you get a little double.
I mean, I feel
like a back and forth young kid and an adult Link, like moving back and forth.
Yeah, totally. That way.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's I mean, that's definitely because you get the best of both worlds that way. I feel like they might. I feel like if how executives think, they'd probably do that, but then style it to look like Breath of the Wild. So Link would probably have like the ponytail, blue shirt, no hat.
That was like one of the weirdest. Like series, like right, like it goes in phases with like the way graphically,
yeah.
And I feel like that's the one thing that bothered me. Like obviously with the N64, with Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, like you know graphically it was like wow, you're like all right, this is cool, like 3D Link, it's awesome, it's you know like obviously it's the next best thing from like Link to the Past. And then it came onto the GameCube and we got. Twilight Princess, and Twilight Princess to me still graphically is the best looking one. It's like the most mature. And I haven't played Skyward Sword, so I guess I think that's similar. But like then you get in those in between.
Skyward Sword's really cartoony.
Yeah.
Like Wind Waker was like so bad.
Yeah, the cell shaded, yeah.
Yeah. And then even now, like I feel like the Switch is such a powerful system, well, semi-powerful system, I should say, that they can't do like an amazing looking game for like Legend of Zelda. Why can't they?
I think
do...
it's sacrificed for the open world. I think that's what Justin or Zach, because we were talking about, is that it's like they're sacrificing the graphics for the open world aspect of it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, we all know what Mortal Kombat looked like on the Switch. That looked terrible on launch day.
Oh yeah,
people were bugging out on that. And they won their money back.
That's insane, dude. I saw that. I was like, holy crap.
I'm really nervous about live action Zelda. Like just like don't mess it up, man. But honestly, kind of like, I guess in a way, it's cool to see live action. But you're gonna have all these characters that aren't live action, right? Like Ganondorf is gonna be some kind of CGI, and in the Gorons and the Zoras and all the side characters, like Deku Tree. Like I honestly am kind of just like, stay with what works. Do an animation like you did Mario Brothers.
Yeah,
I feel like I'd be happier with that, because if like you said, dude,
I agree.
If Link comes out looking like a doofus. In live action, like it's gonna break my heart. So,
dude, for real, yeah. So, I mean, I've used to like 15 years ago, I was like all about like I just want to see everything made live action,
right?
Like, all of it. And now I'm like all my video games, all my anime, like I they're perfect as they are. I don't want people messing it up. You know,
some mediums don't translate, and that's not a problem. That's just the way it is. So
yeah, but devil's advocate here, One Piece, that show was amazing, and like I'm watching the anime now, and like had like a year ago you told me they were gonna make a great live action show based off this, I'd be like that's fucking impossible, like there's no way you can make a good live action off this. And I'm like, I don't know, I mean I guess it's just if you take the people that are making it, if they actually care about it and like make the right decisions, you know, I think that's probably where the secret sauce is with it, you know.
That's how I feel about the Avatar Last Airbender that's coming out, like the animated amazing show, like one of the best shows. It's like my wife's favorite show. She literally watches it all the time. And then like, you know, we had that horrible M. Night Shyamalan Avatar movie, but then like we saw the previews for the new one that's coming out, and the characters look great. The castings look spot on. Like I'm pretty excited about the Avatar for Netflix. And, and I think they just do it right, man. Like, I mean, I'm not a One Punch guy. I haven't,
One Piece.
Yeah. One Piece. I haven't watched it. I know nothing about it, but I was like, man, I really would like to watch this. Everyone's talking and saying it's so awesome, and I just haven't gotten around to it. So I definitely plan on it, but.
Yeah. And then what's dropping? Yeah. Yu Yu Hakusho. That's the next, that one's dropping this week, I think.
On Netflix. Really?
Yeah, I feel like somebody, I know somebody posted about it too. Like, that's live, and I think they did. Didn't they try to do a what's the Ronin one?
Oh, Roni Kenshin. That's like, yeah. That's on Netflix.
Oh yeah, they did. They did that one, right?
Yeah, there's a bunch of those.
I tried to watch Bleach. Like, I watched the live action Bleach movie, and it's just
that looks really shitty. Dumb. That looks so shitty. It's
terrible. Yeah. I didn't mind the Death Note movie. I thought, you know, Death Note's a 30-ish episode, you know, anime where there's really not, it's not too much, you know, crazy the way like that One Piece is or Dragon Ball Z. It's just, the Shinigami, that's it. And I thought I liked the movie. It was a cool hour and a half, to kind of do something different. But yeah, there are some mediums that just like Bleach did not translate well to like live action, to have like a, and that's like, can we ever see like a Final Fantasy VII like live action movie? Listen, I'm good with like
additional. Dude, I think like this thing, Final Fantasy VII, like it's like my favorite video game ever. Like, and the fear that I would have of them fucking it up, but also like, but if you get someone like Christopher Nolan or someone to make like a really fucking good version of it, like I think like it's the video game that has the most potential. I feel like it's got the most potential to be like the best. But also have like also the worst, you know what I mean? Because there's just so much like zany shit in it that like if you don't approach that stuff the right way, it's like it just won't translate well.
There's a dude with a like a multi-gun on his arm and a red tiger dog with like fire on his tail. but here we are, and we got to. I was afraid we're just gonna keep talking and not talk about Final Fantasy VII, but we've got to talk about it.
Right? Oh, we got to end with this. Yeah.
So. I mean, just real quick, like the trailer for me was just, I loved the first game. By no means was it better. I mean, I don't think any of these will be better than the original game, right? But the first one was fun. You got to play with what, 5 characters in the first one? 6 if you count Yuffie, or is that right? Tifa, Aeris. 4? Yeah.
No, 4.
Barret, Cloud, Tifa, Aeris. And then Yuffie would be 5 if you do Intergrade, right? So
yeah.
You get to play with 5. You get Red 13, but you don't use them. But like seeing this trailer come out, and then you see the rest of them, dude. Like, and they kept Cid for a while, and then finally showed Cid. I was like, oh hell yeah, dude!
Well, did you see the key art where they're like standing on the cliff? And it's like the back of all of them. I saw that. I was like, this is like my childhood right here. Yeah, like seeing like, that. Like, yeah, I was like, this is great. This is so good. Yeah.
Well, I sent it to Zach today in Instagram, and they posted it on their Instagram account. It said 77 days to go. And I'm just like, oh, man, 77 days is a long time, but it'll be right around the corner.
Dude, how great was that trailer though? That last one with where they have like the song playing and stuff. Yeah. And they showed like the guy who's Barret's daughter's like real father. Like,
you get that clip. I forgot about it. There's so many like little things. Yeah. There's like the big moments. But then there's so many like little things that are in the game, and you're just like, oh wow, I actually remember that. Yeah, you do play this, and you do, and then the synergy moves that they're gonna do, and then the fact that like you get to play as Sephiroth, like okay, like he's gonna be in my party, like, and the fact that you could switch to them is always still like the best thing, and I just want Vincent because like I remember like when Dirge of Cerberus came out, that game. And you had to play, it was just all Vincent. I'm just like, yes, I get to play as like one of my favorite characters. Like, cause you know, like Cloud was always in like other games, like random games they would put Cloud in, and Sephiroth too. But you know, like Vincent, I'm like, oh my God, I get my own, just him. Just, I could just run around and shoot.
Yeah.
Awesome. But yeah, I'm so excited.
I hope he's awesome. I hope he's awesome in this, cause in the original, he kind of sucked, Vincent. Like, he looked so cool, but like his limit breaks were like shitty. Like, half the times they'd end up hurting him. Remember, like, he turns like a monster and like it hurt your own guys. Like, and I remember, like, I never rolled with him because, like, he was like such like a loose cannon. Like,
I always, that was my lineup, was always Cloud, Red 13, and Vincent, because I didn't care. He was, his backstory was so killer. And like,
that's true. Yeah.
And I loved it so much. I was like, this is my team, dude. But I also hope, and that was so fun about 7 too, like the secret characters, right? Like, you could play the whole game and you never got Yuffie and you never got Vincent if you didn't do it right, you know? Yeah. And I wonder, I mean, I'm guessing it's probably not going to be that way with these ones, but, and even if we do,
because Yuffie's definitely.
Yeah. And Intergrade was fun, man. And I kind of liked how they did that too. It was like, hey, here's some, like, for lack of a better word, like a DLC to the game, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, this is actually like really good gameplay. And now they're taking, like Justin said, the synergy abilities to the new one. And we're going to see that same thing, because that was really fun with Yuffie. And I liked Intergrade.
Yeah.
I thought Intergrade was really cool.
I did too. I thought it was cool that it filled in that part, like when Cloud gets separated from the rest of the group.
Yeah.
And it's like, that takes place during that time. So it mm-hmm. like explains like why you're not playing as Cloud, why you're playing with Yuffie, and how she's like, and what's happening with the other characters that you didn't see, like when he was with Aerith. Like I thought that was cool. Like there was.
And even the character they introduced that you, I can't remember his name, that you play with Yuffie. Like you're like, oh, here's a new guy.
Yeah.
I don't know him. He was cool, man. And like they really did like a good job making that like a cool character.
Yeah, totally. For sure. Yeah. I'm sorry. Do you guys have any predictions of how this one's gonna end going into the third one?
I don't think you're gonna see weapons, or I think it's gonna end at the weapons.
Oh, I think you'll see the weapons. I think you'll get one weapon at least.
I don't know. I don't know where. I can barely remember. Think,
yeah, she's going to die.
Do you think a certain character is going to die? You think so?
I don't know.
I can't like imagine them switching.
Do you guys have a certain team? Like, are you team Aerith or team Tifa? I know that's like a hotly debated thing. Like whenever I like post stuff. Yeah. I like Tifa better too. My wife loves Aerith. She like loves Aerith. And so she's always like, whenever you make a choice, you better damn well pick the Aerith choice, because I want to see the Aerith shit. I'm
like, I just feel like at least in this game, it's good to level up the characters. Like, well, it's a little bit of a different thing, right? You're leveling them all of them together at the same, like even if they're not in your party, like you still get the abilities. Uh-huh. Like in the last one, like, you know, if you used Aerith and nobody else, and then Aerith dies, super and then you weak, have like one weak character, because you'd be using two good characters.
Yeah.
It was always your team. And to be honest, like, how many times did you ever max out Aerith to get her last limit break?
Oh, it was so hard. It was so hard. Because you also had to find, in the original, you had to find the book, right? That like also unlocked their limit breaks. So
mm-hmm. Yes.
Had, like, their own little book or handbook or whatever it was.
Yeah. So it's, mm-hmm. I don't think I think I got in one play, one run through. But it's, for the most part, like, why bother? Like, why try to, unless it's just Zach, I know Zach's going to get 100%. He's going to try to get everybody
the shit out of that. Here's the thing I don't want to do. It's going to infuriate me, and I'm sure it's going to be in there. If I have to waste my time breeding a goddamn golden chocobo, it's going to infuriate me. Because like the original game, that was the worst, dude. Trying to get the, you had to keep
feeding. Dude, remember,
pause the button. You press the buttons to like reload, and so you could try it again. Here's the sprouts or whatever the seeds were. Oh God.
But if you got it, and then you got Knights of the Round.
Knights of the Round. Like, that's the
only reason. Yes. Yeah.
Course.
Dude, okay, so okay, this is a crazy theory. Okay, so you know how like the Knights of the Round are they're 13 knights. It's King Arthur and the 12 knights that come in, right?
Yeah.
What if in now remake, so the numbers of this would actually add up? What if Knights of the Round is all the other lead protagonists from all the other Final Fantasy games?
Oh,
like how sick would that be? Like you summon it and it's like the guy from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then you get Squall. And Titus. Then Zidane and Titus. Then you skip 11 because it's an MMO. Then you get who's ever from 12. I can't remember the guy's name. Then you get Lightning. Then you skip 14 because it's an MMO. And then you get Noctis. That's 13. Like, how sick would that be?
That's crazy. That's pretty crazy. That would be pretty
awesome. No, and then the dude from 16. Sorry, yeah. And the dude from 16 too. It's Clive. Yeah. Hmm. That would be sick. I don't think they're going to do that, but that would be like wild.
Yeah, that was the one problem, in my opinion. I think for the first game, the limit breaks kind of sucked. It was like the limit breaks were really random on how you got them in remake in the first one.
Yeah.
And then even the summons were kind of like not
it's
as
like great. You literally had summons to battle like, for a pretty long time actually to do anything. Yeah. And then, like if you didn't use it, you lose it, like type of thing, which I thought was dumb. Like,
yeah.
I wanted to use it for like
the summons were like. Like the summons were like timed too. It was like you could. Yeah. It was like the game basically told you when you could use them or when you couldn't.
Right.
That was kind of like weak. Like I liked how in the original, it's like it was like an attack and it just had to like charge up again to use it. Right. Yeah. That's how it worked.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, you could only use it once every battle. But then you could go fight like just a regular character. And be like, yeah, I'm not fighting this guy. Just summon Odin comes down for like the most minor character. You have to sit through the cutscene, which was annoying, but. Yeah, the summons and the limit.
Well, yeah, it used MP, right? That's what it was in the original game, because it cost MP. It wasn't like you were like you could use the summon as much as you wanted throughout the battle as long as you had the MP, right?
I thought you could only
use the OG one. The OG.
Yeah, I thought you could only use it once, but I could be. It's been a long, long time since I played it. I don't know where this one's going to end, man. The global, you're getting to the global saucer. We saw a lot of that, right? Yeah. So you're getting all the Kate Sith, my least favorite character, but
I hated Kate Sith. Yeah. And did you see they put like all the goofy stuff in there too, like the play, the stage play and stuff, like all that like weird stuff? Like,
yeah, man. I mean, it's gonna be just like wearing the dresses in the first part, right? Where you had to do that shit again. I don't know.
So, I do want to wrap this up because I have to do a whatnot show and I keep pushing it back, but real quick. So there was this is actually pretty awesome that we were actually just talking about this. So there was a bunch of items that I was watching on a video game auction on Heritage. And one of them was a WADA 9.8 Final Fantasy VII double A sealed. It went for $10,500.
Wow.
Whoa.
Double A. What's that mean?
So like sealed is like double A, A plus, A, B plus, B. Like,
okay. It's like a grading system.
Like, yeah. Cause so, like, the way, so it could still be like you could still get like a 9.8 A plus, and you can get a 9.8 A plus plus. It's based on like the presentation of like how it's sealed. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's like a perfect seal, basically, that's the stupidest thing, in my opinion, the way they do it. But yeah. So, like, that went off for $10,500, and then a 9.8 number 9. Went off for only $1,000. That's actually not bad.
How does the greatest hits do? Because then, you know, they revamped them and had the greatest hits logo on there.
Yeah, those are like way cheaper.
That's what I have, yeah.
And then they this is actually pretty cheap. I was watching a 9.8 Final Fantasy Anthology, which was 1 and 2. That went off for only $440, which was pretty cheap. Not bad. And this I would have bought too. This was actually pretty cool. The original PlayStation magazine, number 1. Which had Final Fantasy on the cover. Somebody had it. It was only graded a 6. It only went for $150. But it's cool because it's got Aerith and Red 13. Barrett's on there. Cloud's obviously right in the main.
God, I love Red 13.
So I was watching.
That's an Arthur Adams cover, I think.
You were probably right. That does look like it. Huh.
Yeah, I'm like 90% sure if memory serves.
But yeah, so that's... I thought that was pretty cool as we're talking. All these just came across my email. But yeah, that's it for our video game talk. Thanks for everybody for still who's listening.
We could have kept going too.
Oh my God, we could still go through all night, but I keep pushing back this show and I really want to do this show. Ken, thank you so much for coming on. Before we thank get out of here, let people know where they can find you.
At Instagram, at VKenMarion, and on X at VKMarion.
Awesome. And then I guess real quick, you know, for people that are going to be, you know, I don't want to like promote this and tell people definitely they can do this, but you know, if people want to do like commissions and stuff upcoming for like King Kong or even obviously down the road for Terrificon, you know, should people contact you? You know, will you do pre-commissions, stuff like that? Like,
yeah. So, I mean, I'll definitely be doing pre-show commissions. My art reps contact info is on both the links in my bios for both X and Instagram. And I'm rep by modernmythologycomicart.com. So if you just Google Modern Mythology Comic Art, that's going to be the first one that pops up. And his email will be there. It's josh@modernmythologycomicart.com. Reach out to him and he will gladly set it up for you for a pickup for either show. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Time. I literally could do 5 hours of just talking video games.
This is what the cons are going to be like, dude. King Con, and this is what Terrific Con is going to be like.
We're just going to sit there and talk about stuff.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Anything else?
I got a couple things coming up. I'll probably post them on Instagram. I'm going to be on a statue channel here shortly. I don't know when it's going to drop. We're going to be recording on Sunday, doing an interview with them. And then something else with Near Mint Condition YouTube channel coming up soon. So I'll promote it a little bit more on my Instagram as we go forward, but keep an eye out for some of that stuff. But that's about it, man.
And for me, if you're listening to this early enough, the Three Men in a Basement are having their live holiday party on the 15th. I'll be jumping on there at some point. So if you're listening to this early on a Friday, if not, catch the rewind on 3 Minute in the Basement. They're doing a 2-hour live show, games, whatever. A bunch of people are jumping on. So a ton of people in the community. So that's it, everybody. Thanks so much. We got 2 more episodes for the rest of the year. And we'll talk to you soon, everybody. Peace out.
Later.